these things, love and wisdom, are mental phenomena. So it's about taking these things and seeing how they apply to the life of our mind. Because as the internal things are dealt with, the external things take care of themselves. So we all have responsibilities, we all work or are involved with people in terms of our communities and our connections, and we all have to engage in those areas in terms of our behaviours and what's appropriate and what's not, and we're making those judgments all the time. But what we see throughout the writings is this idea that, you know, unless the internal things are attended to, then all you really have on that external level is an appearance. So the works of the heavenly doctrine are there to bring an alignment between our internal and our external, so that we become whole, that we are an integrated being. And that is the practical value of this material. So you all have the handout there. The work is divided up into five parts. And those parts, they don't have titles. It's just part one, part two, part three, etc. But they do carry a theme. Each part does carry a theme. And you can see there that I have... in my work going through it, I've identified the theme. You might go through it yourself and have a different emphasis, and that's fine. But for the sake of what we're going to be doing, this thematic kind of works. Works for me, and seeing as I'm presenting, you guys are going to just have to run with it for now. But part one, there, it deals with the nature of God as source and man as a recipient of divine love and wisdom. I'm not going to make the language gender neutral. The term is gender neutral. The term man is homo, so it's mankind, humankind. So just be aware of that. Part two, the theme is the manifestation of divine love and wisdom as the son of the spiritual world. And so it's dealing with the creative power of the Lord in that case. Part three deals with what that son produces and its effects in terms of the structure of creation. Okay. Part four, the theme are the uses, deals with uses as ends of creation. And the origin and nature of good and evil uses. So it goes into a discussion on that. And part five, it deals with the will and the understanding viewed from physiological correspondence. Now, these themes are integrated into a sort of a cyclic movement. You know, you start... It starts top down. You start with the divine and what the divine is, and it moves through down into uses and creation, and through human beings, how those uses enable or facilitate a return back to the divine, and so the circle is complete. So that's kind of the broad overview of the work, Divine Love and Wisdom. Now, points to hold in mind when working with the text. It is divine revelation. Okay? We may have a different sense of what that means, but in terms of my understanding, in terms of what that means, as divine revelation, its primary purpose is to support the salvation of the human race. And so when you're working with this material, you're working with material that is transformative in nature. And what I mean by that is that it will deconstruct your thinking and reconstruct it into a form that is able to receive more fully the Lord's love. Because the whole purpose of truth, and in order for truth to be true, it has to lead to goodness. If truth doesn't lead to goodness or love, then it's not true. Because all truth is a value statement about what good is. And good is a statement about what truth is. The two are one. Okay. So it is divine revelation, and when you come to a text that is divine revelation, you really do need to still yourself and enter into it in a way whereby you are able to hear it speaking into your life. And so the mindset we bring to these texts is critical. It is critical to the degree to which we are able to actually experience the Lord in them and through them. So this is the way that the Lord, under divine providence, has ordained for human beings to be able to be in touch with celestial and spiritual realities. And that's a wonderful thing. So it's a sacred task, engaging with this material. There is a need to draw a distinction between spiritual principles and illustration from the natural world. Okay, so what you find in the text is that there will be a principle being expounded, and then you'll get a discussion drawing from illustrations of what you experience in the natural level of life. It's not a commentary on the natural world as such. What we have is the use of the natural world and our experience of the natural world, what is represented in the natural world, in support of the spiritual principle. Does that make sense? So when we're discussing creation, don't allow your mind to be limited to the physical and the material. Creation begins with the spiritual sun, okay, which is high above the celestial heaven. So the whole, that when you're thinking of creation, we're thinking from what is inmost to what is outermost. We get stuck on the outside, then the text will not make sense. There will be a lot of things in it that just won't connect. So you have to be thinking from what is higher into what is lower, and see what is lower as being a representation of what is higher. All right. The text is very much a work that appeals to reason, but it is confirmed through experience. So there is a constant reference. Swedenborg constantly references experience. He often will give us a thought experiment to do. You know, like you'll find there's a few thought experiments in Divine Love and Wisdom that if you can't think of an example straight offhand, but if you would only do this, then you would see this. So there are statements like that through the text. And so when you see something like that, don't just read over it. Have a go. Have a go at doing what is actually being asked. Because it's put there so that we can have a greater perception of what's being dealt with. Okay? So, as I said earlier, the work is immensely practical. Its value is in its application to our spiritual growth and development. The Lord's love is a love for the salvation of the human race. That's what the Lord is interested in, you know, drawing us closer to himself. And that's what that is about. So, just flip over. Now, what I have done, you know, I had grandiose plans at the start of this to, we will go through the text. That has been reduced down to section A, part A, or part one. And I've broken part one down into three parts, and we're dealing with the first part today. So I've given you a broad overview, but over subsequent seminars, this will be a theme that I will be carrying, which will be moving through the work to its completion, hopefully. So just up there we see, so the three sections, these are artificially broken down. I've put these breaks in. So you see there 1A, 1B and 1C. Okay, and so we're going to be dealing with 1A today, which is the first six propositions that are laid out there, and that's Divine Love and Wisdom, numbers 1 to 22. All right, before I go on, any comments? Or questions?
All makes sense so far.
Good. All right. There are a number of key concepts there. What I would like you to do, just, you know, you can share amongst each other, just within the space that you're in. And what I want you to do is perhaps just have a think about, just for a few minutes, about the terms there, and just write out your sense of the terms, maybe just in threes or something like that, or if people want to come around and form a larger group, you can, using the inside chairs. So I'd ask you to move to do that now, and all I want you to do is just move through these terms quickly, just the terms on the page. Essay, exister, a being, and manifestation, love, wisdom, those terms. So just so that we can get a sense of how people understand these terms.
Well, again, I think that it's the inner and the outer, very much the inner and the internal person, the person who thinks and is as if you are when you're alone, we are, and then the existence to me, the existence, the outer, that's when it's presented to someone.
It's all about the lack of
All the left-hand ones together and all the right-hand ones together.
They're self-defining, but they are terms, you know, so how do people get on in terms of their own description of what these terms are or might be?
Siobhan? I'm volunteering somewhere.
You're on your helmet.
The least that swine could do.
Well, for me, it's been that particularly the first one. I actually described my week, described what I've been working with this week, and both in an external level with clients, trying to explain to them that who they are and the essence inside them is who, when they're alone by themselves, and when they think and talk within themselves, and then you walk out into the world and you are in the external then, and then you present through your outer persona into the world, and that's an example of the inner and the outer. Lovely. You know, and the inner being connected in the flow of the divine, and then the outer, the existence of that in the world.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Yes, the first one is the third one, aren't we?
Okay.
And it's just love and wisdom is the same as all over the planet.
Yep. Thanks, John.
We had the I am down as the essay and the being.
That's right. So I am being. Yep, Old Testament terms for.
Yeah. What is
Jehovah, Yahweh. Okay, which actually literally means. I did have it in the notes somewhere. So I get it right. So, in the notes and comments under the second section, 4-6, there, you'll see. Second paragraph under notes and comments section. So that's a concordant version of the Old Testament. In terms of the actual letters that make the group, the Hebrew letters that make up the name, which is translated as Jehovah, they literally mean will be, being, and was. Okay, so anyone want to make a comment about that in terms of New Testament?
Who is and it was and it is God.
Exactly, yeah. Right, yeah. One and the same.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you break down the letters, that's what they literally mean. Okay, so it's being itself. Okay. Anyone else?
Well, I thought on the S side is the unseen and what is felt, whereas on the right side is more the unseen but the expressed. And on the other side as well, of course, in the Lord, they're united. And we felt that the S only belongs to the Lord. That, so okay. we derive being from it, so that part doesn't actually relate to us.
Not in a strict sense,
no.
But in a relative sense.
That's right, yeah. So, but that particular term in that way.
Yeah. Thanks, mate. Anyone else? What about the last term there in that group? Yeah, so essence tends to describe love and wisdom together. Okay, so it's like a coding, I suppose, or a term that sort of captures both those things. So essence is from those things. Okay. There are other terms there, God, man, human, life, creation, infinite, finite. Now, one of the things is that we can rattle these terms off because we've read them and we've read the definitions of them, so we know what they mean. But in actual fact, that's a trap. That is a trap. You really need to be aware that often the way terms are used, familiar terms, like, a classic term is the term church, which is used throughout the heavenly doctrine. And it has a very specific meaning. as do these terms. So the doctrines themselves define the terms, and what we have to be careful is that we don't bring the external associations we have with a term, the common understanding of a term, and just make the assumption we know what it means. Okay? Because very often it will be used in a specific way, and until we look into that, we won't really have any idea about how it should be used. Okay, so just be aware of that. The N and the S in that next statement is natural and spiritual. Okay, I should have written that out. But so the natural, so there's in this first part of divine love and wisdom. We have some kind of core ideas, and this is a really core one. There's the distinction between a natural and spiritual idea of space and its relationship to the Lord's omnipresence, or how the Lord can be omnipresent. So that is something that is dealt with in this section. And then below that, I've just listed some of the questions that that this particular section deals with. You know, what is man? What is God? What is love? What is love? What is wisdom? And what's the relationship between God and man, love and wisdom? Okay, so these are helpful to have in your mind when you're starting out reading, because it can direct your attention to the text and what it's really exploring in this particular opening part. Okay, so if we say that that the Lord is omnipresent, what does that mean?
He's in all creation.
It's everywhere.
Okay, so when we talk about He's everywhere, where do we mean?
Is
He out here?
Yeah.
Is He?
Yeah.
In space and time?
No.
No?
No.
No, not in space and time.
It's a tricky concept because our language deals with here and there in spatial terms.
Is the Lord in space? Is
space doesn't exist.
Yes, but not confined to space.
Okay, yeah. Anyone else?
Well,
we've said the Lord is everywhere.
He's in space or time.
He's not in space or time. So is He everywhere?
I like what Lorraine says, because just because I like it, it's comforting to think that the Lord is in the same dimension and time and space here with us, with me,
okay,
as well as. But He's not confined, like she
said.
She's
in every leaf and tree.
So we've got a tension here, right? Can people see that? Right.
I've got a sense that creation is ongoing, and the divine is, through its outpouring, manifesting itself every moment. And we wouldn't be here without that continual creation. So in that sense, I would appreciate omnipresence. And there's so much interconnectedness. Again, that's an example of me, of a manifestation of God's omnipresence.
Okay. Yeah. Anyone else?
No, I understand it as the Holy Spirit.
Okay. Can you enlarge on that, Lenore?
Well, that was why the Lord came, and that's what He presented us with. And it infiltrates everything.
Okay.
And acts through people, to people, through nature.
Okay.
Human beings.
Okay.
I think of the Lord, Lord's omnipresence. The Lord is space and time. Without Him, I am because God is. We wouldn't be anything. There would be nothing without the Lord.
That's true. Yes. Yeah. But we still have a philosophical tension between. I just want you to see that. I mean, I'm not suggesting an answer or anything like that. But we make assumptions about things, and it's not until we really begin to explore them. And these tensions are the stuff of growth. This is the growing edge. And so it can be, at times, when we're working with a text like this, it can be like we're stepping out into the abyss. You know, we're going beyond our limited capabilities. We're going to go our finite, but we never go beyond our finite capabilities. But the thing is that we're going beyond our understanding at any particular point in time when we really start to work with this idea. Because, you know, we know, as it says, that the Lord is not in space and time. But it does say he's omnipresent. So what the text actually draws out is the need to have an angelic idea about space. And if we can let a little bit of light in terms of an angelic idea of what space is, then perhaps some of this tension can be reconciled. Okay, so what is the angelic idea of space? What's the spiritual idea of space?
Turning away from God makes a space.
Yeah, so what is turning away from involved? What are we taught? What turns away?
Our heart.
Our hearts, yep.
Shifts in state.
Shifts in state. Glenn?
I think that at some level the creation of particles involves the Lord actually withdrawing himself from the forms that are created by manifestation of love. And so he actually creates that deadness that then allows there to be things that are apart from him. So.
Challenging, isn't it?
Yeah.
Challenging idea to get your head around this one. Now, because if we explore that idea, then what we have is the idea that the Lord was somehow in it to begin with. And if he was in it, he was in space and time. And now he's withdrawn. Now, the Lord doesn't actually move anywhere. So there are tensions all over the place. In these kind of explanations that we draw. And it's not that the explanations are wrong. It's just that we are limited in terms of language and experience and trying to describe these things. You know, the term influx suggests movement through space. But the Lord doesn't move through space. He is omnipresent. He doesn't have to move through anything. Okay? So these are the kinds of tensions that you are confronted with as you move through the text. Are we okay to leave us on the abyss? Is that people are happy to be standing on the edge?
I think you said at the last seminar that space was. It comes to our general use of the term, I feel close to you, for example. It's some sort of affinity of melody. Yes. And, yeah.
Yeah, okay, we can just expand on that a bit, perhaps. You know, so when we're talking, so there's another term, the term state. All right. What's being described? State in terms of human states.
Our receptivity to divine love and wisdom.
Yeah, what's a state made up of?
Affection.
Yes, affection and
the truth or falsity.
Yeah. Things of love and things of
faith.
Wisdom. Okay? Things that are, you know, goods and truths or their opposites. Okay? So that when you're talking about a state, you're talking about a relationship. Okay, you're talking about relational things. And that have to do with the things of love and wisdom. Now, what is the source of love and wisdom?
God.
Yeah. The Lord, God, the source, right? Every single human state is from what? Ultimately.
God.
The Lord. And so it contains things and relations that have to do with love and wisdom. And can you begin to see how it is that the Lord is omnipresent?
Yes.
He is in every single angelic and human state. And so he is fully present outside of space, outside of time, but fully present in those states, because those states have their origin in the Lord himself.
But isn't the Lord present in our understanding of space and time?
He is. Our perception of space and time is an outflow of the Lord's own life. So space corresponds to, or distance corresponds to,
affection.
Affection. It corresponds. Yeah, so space and distance, they correspond to things of love, and time corresponds to the things of
wisdom.
Why?
Because it's measurable. It's a form, it's a structure.
It's a change. It's a state, change of state.
Yeah, so what is time?
A measure of growth or
It's linear, right? So it's, you know, our experience of time is something that moves linearly. I'm sure there's a better way to pronounce it, but and so when we grow and develop, our understanding of truths, our experience of it, is a linear building. We grow in our understanding. You need the foundational kind of knowledge first, you work with that, you get more understanding, and so that's why it corresponds to time. Okay?
And time shortens or lengthens with, in relation to our affections.
Exactly right. So they are intimately related. You know, so, and space corresponds to things of love, because, and we use it in our language, as Helmut pointed out, you know, it's about affinity. It's about who we feel close to, who we feel distanced from. So we have the idea of that. Those spiritual ideas translate into a physical experience of space, because that's how it's represented on a physical plane.
Now, I always teach little kids that God's in every stone, in every tree. So is that just through the correspondence of what that is?
Yes, I would say yes.
And but as an artist is in his pictures. Only as an artist is in his pictures. That's one of the illustrations of
divine
wisdom.
Yeah.
The stone is not God.
No, the stone is not God, but nor is the artist the picture.
That's right.
But the picture reveals immense things about the artist.
Yes. So it's a mirror.
It is a mirror.
It's a reflection.
It corresponds to a particular quality or a small aspect of the divine.
Yeah.
And it corresponds fully.
So just another sort of voidy kind of thing. What does it mean for something to correspond? Related to? What does it mean?
Outward appearance of the inner.
So there's that kind of relationship of outer to inner.
Oh, to infuse.
To infuse, yeah, nice.
Reflect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two things on a different. And what's the relationship between the two things on the different planes?
Well, the one on the higher plane is a cause.
Yep.
And the one on the lower plane is an effect.
Yep. Okay, so that's exactly right. Did everyone hear that?
Yes.
Yep.
Cause and effect.
Cause and effect. So correspondence, yes, it is all those adjectives that were brought out. But if you're looking at what correspondence means in terms of how the doctrine defines it, what you are dealing with is a causal relationship. A thing corresponds because something higher is bringing it into being in that moment. Okay, so the things that you know, the pond of water exists due to the fact that truth is bringing it into being in that very moment. It doesn't. A correspondence doesn't exist independently. You get more into sort of an independent relationship when you talk about representations. And the thing is that we often confuse the terms. Okay, they are closely related, but they are not the same.
All right.
So just be aware of that. Correspondence speaks of cause and effect, a living relationship between what is higher and lower. A representation can give us a reflection and can give us qualities of something. For example, one of the examples used is the representation of kingship. Okay, so you can have a king, kings of Israel. Whether they are good or bad, evil or good, is kind of irrelevant to the representation. The representation of kingship stands as a representation of the Lord. The individual's quality in that representation does not impact on the representation itself.
Is that analogous?
Yeah, there's another way of arguing it as being an analogy. Okay, so this is all kind of edgy sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's things that we need to be thinking in a positive way, critically, as we're reading. We need to be reading with attention. That's the thing. Openness to being enlightened in new ways. So the things that are in the notes and comments, what I've done here, you won't have time to go through them in this session, but what I've done is I have summarised my take on each section and sort of try to do that as closely as I can. But what I recommend you do is if you're going to make a study, then read the actual work. The italics kind of, you've got italic bold quotes, the both italic bold, they're taken from the text. Pretty sure they will be verbatim from the text. The lighter stuff is my comment and trying to summarise what's there. If you just go through to the application section, which is at the end of the notes and comments. So just quickly, this kind of just draws out some of the applicational aspects of it in relation to spiritual growth and development in relation to regeneration and salvation. So under applications, there's a quote from number 13. The idea of God constitutes the inmost of thought, of those who have religion. And unless there be a just idea of God, there cannot be any communication with the heavens. That the state of a person's life after death is according to the idea of God affirmed within them. This appears manifestly from the opposite of this proposition, namely that the negation of God constitutes hell, and in the Christian world, the negation of the divinity of the Lord. So the idea of God that's presented to us in that short section, those propositions 1 to 6, is God, the Lord, Jehovah, so different terms used. Also, I should have thrown in there the divine. The term the divine is used a lot in divine love and wisdom. Okay. And the reason for that, actually, the reason is given. And the reason is that it has to do with this whole idea of God being human, being a man, if you like, being in the human form. And what Swedenborg points out there is that if he used a term that brought associations of human, then people would start thinking in terms of a big person. So they're thinking in space and time, and it just wouldn't be what he has to say wouldn't be received. Whereas when he talks about the divine, much easier for theologians of the day to actually at least hang with it for a bit. Okay, so that was the reason given. So the Lord, Jehovah, the Lord Jesus Christ, is infinite, uncreated, esse being, existere, manifestation, love, life, exists in himself, underived, eternal, is love and wisdom, is man, possesses all things a human being or a man possesses, with the difference that in him all things are infinite and therefore one distinctly. And then the divine is not in space, and makes that statement as well. Okay, so, and we will cover that idea there a little bit more, this idea of the Lord being man, in the AC session I'm doing, so I won't enlarge on that here. The process of creation. Okay, we had a discussion around the breakfast table this morning about this. He who exists in himself is God from whom all things are. Right? So he who exists in himself is God from whom all things are. There is nothing prior to the divine. Okay, so another helpful thing is when you're thinking of the relationship between the infinite and the finite, and when you're talking about it being prior, it can be helpful to think of prior not in terms of a point of beginning, but in terms of in terms of what is more fundamental. Okay, so rather than thinking in time, the Lord is prior in the sense that He is higher. And there's no beginning for the Lord. He is self-existent, all things being in Him. Man, from what is finite, can't be created from this essay, right, or what the divine is, from the infinite directly, for by definition the divine is one and indivisible. Therefore, man must be created from created and finite things, or finited things, that are so formed that the divine can be in them, making men and angels recipients of life. Okay, Glenn touched on this before. So, in order to create man or angels, there has to be something finited that can receive the divine into itself. Okay. And that's probably, well, I probably didn't say that very clearly, but it's probably not as clear as we think. a similar statement when it talks about the spiritual self says, the Son is divine love, can't create anyone from itself immediately by its heat and light, for they would then be love in essence, which is the Lord himself. So the Lord can't create another divine. Okay. But it can create from substances and matters so it should be so formed to receive this heat and light. Okay. So, what is meant by creation? What are the heavenly doctrines talking about when they're talking about creation? I'll give you a hint. They're not talking about
the expression of God's love.
They are. Where's that expressed?
The spirit of man, the spiritual.
Yeah.
Love and relationship.
The term creation creates, you know, you only have to look at the opening chapter of the Arcana to see this. It's talking about regeneration. It's talking about regeneration. That's the spiritual idea of creation. So if it's talking about what's critical to our regeneration, to our connection with heaven?
Knowledge.
Yeah. Knowledge. Where do we get that knowledge? The Word. What are the finited things that the Lord can be present in that can be in us? The Word. So the finited things are not the things in the representative sphere of our perception. The finited things are the truths, right? The appearances of truth that the Lord has given us through the Word. Because it is those that are involved in the creation of the human mind.
And everything else is derived from that.
Everything else is derived from that, Glenn.
I just react to your nod in the stuff out there, because there's so many passages that say that the whole of the created universe is a theater, and the one particular one that I'm thinking of that's representative of the Lord and His kingdom, and so much so that if the nature of representations is known or correspondence, regeneration can be learned from a tree. And that's a big if. And I'm not arguing your main point, which is...
How is your perception of tree brought into being?
Talk about it at the morning team.
We stand on the void, folks. But, so have a look through the notes. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to defer you to the word to seek the Lord's wisdom so that you can get your answers. But, no, but if you do have questions, I'm happy to expand on that. I just want to say one thing. Like, there is a TPA center at 1. To be advised.